This episode of the Agile Uprising podcast is brought to you by VGroup Digital. VGroup Digital provides native cloud-based software development services on iOS, Android, web, Mac, and Windows, as well as enterprise product development, maintenance, and support. VGroup Digital is led by a team of agile practitioners who believe in collaboration, constant feedback, and delivering the highest value at all times. Visit www.vgroupdigital.com for more info and mention the Agile Uprising podcast to get up to 15% off all development services.
This is the Agile Uprising podcast.
Evening and welcome to another Agile Uprising podcast. Tonight we have an interesting topic that should spark some really good debate. I guess in these political times it might be good for an interesting debate. We're going to be discussing invite or inflict within the Agile sort of framework. We'll get into that and what that means in a minute. So with me tonight we have Mike McCalla. And we also have Jay Hersko and me, Andrew Leff. I'm going to pass the baton over to Mike to sort of give us an overview of what sparked this topic for this evening.
Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, so 2 weekends ago, I had the pleasure of spending 3 days with a bunch of other Agile coaches out in Agile Coach Camp in St. Louis. And it was an open space event, and perhaps the most intriguing sessions where they're actually back-to-back-to-back, whereas this session about inviting versus inflicting Agile towards others. And just to give them the plug, the session was facilitated by Zach Boniker as well as Michael Herman. And what was really probably most interesting, about it was that we actually got into a conversation about as Agile coaches, our mission is to improve the lives of software developers, right? To improve the world of software development. But in our jobs, our daily jobs, because keep in mind that probably a majority of the attendees were consultants, a lot of us are probably inflicting Agile on folks. And are we actually doing more harm than good towards that overall mission? And that really got me thinking about how I go about coaching, but I'm also in a difficult spot. So I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on this, because I did write a blog post about it, and I'm really interested to hear what others have to say.
So this is definitely a cool topic. I sort of was thinking about this after reading your blog, Mike, and it was interesting. So for me, sort of, I think this might be a good segue into jumping into sort of how we were all exposed into sort of our own Agile journey. And my quick sort of overview of being the world's best BA, writing comprehensive documentation and phenomenal requirements that, you know, should have been framed and were artwork worthy.
You always got them right up front, right? Right, Lef?
Always. Right. I knew everything. King of the world. But what I did notice was I was the only one that cared and the only one that was reading them. So I had a consultant that I was working with when I was creating a BA center of excellence, and sort of gave me exposure into sort of this Agile craziness and opened my eyes to a different way of sort of thinking and actually writing business and creating business value. So pretty much that was my, go ahead. That was sort of my jump off into the Agile space. It was a wild sort of experience, extremely resistant. I had no interest in it, but the more I got to learn and the more I started utilizing some of the methods and process, the more I was like, wow, this makes a lot more sense to me. So that was over 10 years ago at this point. It's taken me a long time to sort of figure out what all this means, still figuring it out. So that's sort of been my entry into this sort of space. So it was more of the invite than the inflict. How about you, Jay?
So mine was, I was at an engagement where we were doing what amounts to an iterative waterfall. And there was an appetite to try and find a new way of doing things because it became apparent that as time was going on, as we were getting more and more budget because the company was profitable and doing well, there was not enough time to get the work done that we wanted to do. So it came down from the top of the mountain that maybe we should go out and experiment and introduce new ways of doing things to try it out. Truly like a tech startup sort of, you know, go bleeding edge, go try and do something new and see what happens. There was a team or two doing Kanban. I was on a team for a project where we tried to utilize Scrum. We sort of ham-fisted it. We got a couple of months in. I will say that it was a bit of a culture shock for a lot of people. For almost everyone on the team, no one had any formal background or formal certification or experience except for what they read on the internet, which is always a recipe for success. And we sort of muddled through, which wasn't the worst thing. I actually ended up leaving that company to go to another organization in downtown Philly, and they were fully embracing Agile. I went and got certified as a Scrum Master, and then that's when I started to really practice what I would call good Agile. But that first step was what wet my appetite, because it was fascinating to go from this very rigid way of doing things to a more loose, quicker paced, you know, less writing, more doing, more value, don't plan, deliver value. And I thought that was pretty neat. So I was sort of, I would say I was invited, but Mike, when you first brought up inflicted versus invited, one of the things that jumped out at me is, should there or should there not, maybe I'm leading us on a bit of a tangent here, should there or should there not be a third option called inspire? And the reason I bring that up is, you know, you can inflict Agile on other people. You can force them to adopt a framework or a methodology or a way of doing things, which, you know, we'll talk more in a minute. You can invite someone to go on a journey with you, to invite them to utilize Agile as a way to solve some problems and make some forward progress. Or maybe there's another option of inspiring them, pointing out some of the reasons why using this type of iterative methodology would be better for them, and poke something inside, find some intrinsic motivation that allows them to take the drive and utilize the experiment and go forward. What are your thoughts on that? You were in the camp. So was anything like that come up, or am I, you know, too many beers?
I think that's a great point, dude. And I know exactly what you're saying there, right? Because when I hear invite, and what a lot of people were talking about in the camp was kind of just seed it, right? Hey, we're going to do this thing over here, and if you want to come over and kind of join us, you know, go right ahead. And I think this is very in tune with the conversation that we're going to have, us all being coaches. Inspire is probably a better word for the approach that we use. But I will also agree here, Hershko, that you are leading us down a rabbit hole. Let me tell my story first.
I was going to say, let's back up and give Mike sort of his entryway into the Agile space.
Sorry, I was over exuberant. I apologize.
No, I'll make it fast, because my story is a little bit different than you guys, because I think both you guys grew up in large organizations when I grew up basically in two startups, right? So basically it was all hands on deck. We had a whole bunch of people slinging code, cowboys, just to get paid the next pay period. And so when, as a lead analyst there, I was also a VA, the director of development came to me and said, hey, we want to do this thing called Agile. I think it'll actually bring some discipline to us. So completely from the different end of the spectrum, right? And we're gonna send you up to New York, get your CSM, I actually sat in a class with Michael James, and you know, the rest is history, right? Because I immediately knew, like, hey, this is kind of what we've been doing all along. We can use Scrum to give us a framework and provide that discipline. But it was always about the people in that startup and empowering them to make decisions, because we couldn't move without that. And it was just kind of putting a name to it. And I immediately identified with it.
That's so interesting.
I guess to say if I was invited or inflicted, I would say neither. I was voluntold to go to that CSM class, right? But, you know, I wasn't resisting whatsoever. And it was actually a blessing in disguise.
That's pretty interesting. We got to make a note to come back to that. The idea that Agile was pitched as to add structure. I don't think I've ever heard that used in that. Not to say that it doesn't provide structure, but I've never heard that train of thought be utilized as a stick to say to go Agile.
That's crazy talk. That's insane.
Isn't that wild? So my last two, three engagements ago down in Wilmington, same thing, right? Startup. Uh-huh. Just slinging code, 18 different branches of code, right? No standards, not a thing. They implemented Scrum to provide that discipline.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Blog post.
Yeah, no. So now that we've sort of, you know, gone through our individual sort of journeys here, I think you sort of touched on a point, Mike, when you were talking at the opening around sort of as consultants, are we doing more harm than good? You sort of keyed in on the word harm. So I know going in, you know, as a consultant into organizations, they say we want to be agile, right? No one knows what that means. You know, pay me $1 million and I'll make you agile in a day. I'll wave my magic wand and I'll walk out the door type deal. So as responsible consultants, how do you sort of create that invite model as opposed to the infliction upon everyone, this crazy wild, wild west? No one knows what the heck's going on.
Well, that's so when I mentioned balance, I think in my opening statement, or I'm in a tough spot, it's exactly what I was meaning, right? Because I'm hired to be a change agent. And typically to be a change agent, you're driving change. You are inflicting agile, right? And so because at the end of the day, the stakeholders want results. Right. So how, you know, what type of approach could I use? Sure, I'm diplomatic in that approach. But it's, you know, it's my ass on the line too. You know, I want to be extended. I want to be able to be there and help this organization. And I'm not going to let some resistors stand in my way. Right. So, you know, it's about finding that balance for me. Not to be cliche and give the agile answer, but it depends, right? You know, there's people there, like to me, when we go and we approach people with agile, I'm finding a lot more nowadays that people are much more inviting, right? Much more open to learning about Agile because it's in their best interest. So that's an easy sell, right? But there are still some resistors that you have to kind of find your way, because the resistors are usually the project managers, the architects. And without them, man, you're not going anywhere. So you do kind of have to find your way with each person, but you got to get there quick. So how do you do that? Right.
Yeah. So that's a great point. So when you're finding yourself having to drive that change, right? Like be that, inflict that agile upon somebody or the framework upon somebody, you know, this creates discomfort. And that's sort of, you know, I know in my role, that's pretty much what I do. It's going in and creating discomfort and really, you know, testing the water to see how uncomfortable people are willing to get. So when do you sort of change your philosophy? And maybe Jay, you want to take a stab at this because you've been in some large corporations. When do you sort of figure out, okay, people are uncomfortable. What do I need to do to sort of get them to feel a part of this, or, you know, to kind of come along with the journey as opposed to being the, you know, putting the brakes on everything? Or do you just cut bait and say, you're never going to get it, I'm walking away?
I'll take a stab at that. So I think... Well, first of all, I think one of the unheralded talents that comes along with being an agile coach is the salesmanship aspect, right? There is a bit of salesmanship in the idea of having to, like Mike said, walk into an organization. You are hired to help them go from A to B, to utilize this new way of thinking. And there is a little bit of cajoling and a little bit of salesmanship and convincing. I think the goal for me, I mean, I would approach it as you want to get enough people convinced that this is the right thing to do. You know, that internal change agent, that person who's bought in from the inside, that it basically leads to a tipping point. You need to find the people who are the mouthpieces, the floor leaders, the people who are visible and who can impact everyone else's opinions. And if you can get them convinced, the more that you invite them and invite them and get them bought in, they will in turn invite others, right? It's like train the trainer and all this other cliche type stuff. I do think you do eventually reach a point though where there are some people who are, and I know we've all shared some of the same foxholes, so we've come across some of the same people who, for whatever reason, are intractable. You know, they're very happy with how they do what they do, and they're not really open to change. And that those are the kind of people that you inadvertently end up inflicting it on them. But I don't necessarily think that's the worst thing in the world. It's like the Pareto principle. If you have 80% of the people you're working with, they're all invited and they're all bought into this journey, and there's 20%, 10% that are sticks in the mud. I mean, there's only so much you can do. You know, another cliche, but you can only lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink. That's what I'm thinking.
But you can drown him.
Well, yeah. Well, you can also make them drink with a really inappropriate remark, and I'm not going that way this early in the evening. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah. So Mike, I was going to ask you. So walking into these situations, and it's not just the coach, right? I mean, the organization has a responsibility to sort of adapt, and if the organization is resistant to that, it's never. You know, I think it was Drucker that said, you know, culture eats change for breakfast or something along those lines. So, you know, how do you, when you are dealing with, let's say, even your agile change agents, like your scrum masters that are just not catching on, how do you uplift the team to get them to reflect and sort of understand where they're going wrong?
So I'll first approach it with, it starts, if you go into and you're transforming a large organization, right, the best way to do it is to have those champions at the top, driving it from the top down, and also have those people on the bottom, those kind of leaders within those teams that give you that grassroots feel, right, that momentum on the bottom, right? Without those two things, a lot of times you end up spinning your wheels, right? The second thing I'll focus in on there, Lef, is the scrum masters, because when I'm in a place for, let's say, 6 months to a year, right, how do you make that sustainable once I walk out the door, right? And the answer to that to me is the scrum masters. So you really have to focus on them, making sure they understand their role as a change agent, right? So not necessarily as an impediment remover, and that, I'll tell you, that's a title that really pisses me off, right? It's so much more than an impediment remover, right? They are going to be the champion once I walk out the door. And the only way it's going to be sustainable is to kind of bring them up. Now, whether or not, you know, they're accepting to that is another story. And I'm going through it right now where there's a lot of traditional project managers there that are making the transition, and it's a little painful. And every one of them is different, right? It's just like every team's different, right? You know, you always find something that makes a team tick. It's the same thing with people, right? You know, you just got to find that. And I think, like Jay said, salesmanship, right? You have to be personable with these people, because a lot of times after you end up peeling it back and you have those personal conversations, it makes a big difference, right? You can actually really make a connection with that person, which hence allows you to coach them a lot better.
So I think that's sort of always been an interesting point in any transformation for me. So when you get to that where you're sort of able to peel it back, how, I guess, you have the pressures of the organization coming down on you to do a job, right? You said it before, you're getting walked out the door if it's not getting done. So how do you sort of give enough time for change to happen, yet show that change is happening? Where, you know, you're not just waiting and waiting and waiting. You're like, it takes time, but you're really pushing. You're pushing to get that change to happen, and sometimes pushing it to get it happen way sooner than it normally could.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm guilty, absolutely 100% guilty, when I first go into a place and I first get a team, that I do a lot of the doing, right? And we can say shuhari and all that type of stuff, and that's what I usually point to. But there is a little personal agenda there, right? I do a lot of facilitation, because it sets the example for the scrum master. And so I drive it by doing in the beginning. But the real motive behind there is setting an example for the scrum master. So, you know, when I move on to another team or I walk out the door, right? And don't get me wrong, like this is like maybe the first month, first two or three sprints, right? I'm driving things in there, right? And you know, am I inflicting? Yeah, probably. But you know, I try to play, and Lef, I think you said this in a previous podcast, right? I try to play that role of like the parent, right? Where I'm like fostering that relationship, right? But I'm also kind of driving that discipline. And finding that balance, it's really difficult, right? And one thing that I always lean on is that personal thing, right? Like I make sure that I catch up with each one of them. Like one of the things that we were talking about in camp was, hey, what do you try to do each day? What are you doing from a coach perspective? And mine was meeting with at least one or two of my team members, not scrum masters, not product owners, but the team themselves, right? And really getting to be that, you know, have that personal relationship.
No, and I think that that's a skill set. It truly is. You know, that's, you know, I got to chuckle because I think all of us have been in that situation where literally you just want to take your computer and throw it across the room. And some of us probably have done that.
I have.
Yeah, guilty. Yeah, I mean, Jay, sort of when you're taking an approach, I mean, we've all worked in sort of challenging environments. You know, how do you, I love that terminology with the parental figure. Sometimes you have to be the nurturer. Sometimes you have to be the disciplinarian. You know, how do you sort of do both at the same time where you're stern but comforting, where literally, you know, the team is, you're insulating the team, but you're not allowing them to get away with stupid things. You know, how do you sort of empower the beauty of this framework around, you know, the true core values without just, you know, ramming them down people's throats? I've always found that approach, when you come in and you start spouting off all this agile jargon and mumbo jumbo, it sort of shoots yourself in the foot. I know it does for me. So people have to have a level of understanding of what this even is. And it's not a, you know, sort of kumbaya, hey, listen, we're going to do whatever we want because we're self-managing type deal. So, you know, have you had any sort of success, or what have been some of the failures of things that you've tried? That's sort of,
and Jay, I think the cool thing here is that you can answer this question from not only the lens of a scrum master, but also from like a development manager, right? Because it's really, right, it's really leadership 101, right? And then, so that's an interesting take on this as well.
Yeah, it does tie a lot to, you know, we talked before about soft skills and salesmanship, and it does dovetail really into that whole leadership toolkit about knowing what to say and when to say it. It is, to your point, to your initial point, Andrew, it is very hard to be the stern disciplinarian, but to also be the inspiring leader, the one who, you know, I realized I did something wrong and I'm sorry, I don't want to disappoint you again. Let's get that right next time. As a development manager, it's, for me, you know, Mike, you talked a lot about building that personal rapport, right? And building that relationship with coworkers, subordinates, clients, customers, bosses, executives who feel comfortable with you, that they realize where you're coming from, and they know that what you're saying is it's coming from the heart, right? The last engagement that I had where we actually did a transformation, we knew it was coming before it actually officially came, right? And the line I kept repeating to my people, I says, do you know this is coming? It would behoove you to do some reading and some research and get familiar with it. It's not going to be fun at points. It's not going to be easy or simple. And it may in fact be painful. However, we've built a solid core of sharp people. You know, I was lucky to hire all of them. So I said, I hired you all for a reason. I think if we work with each other and work off of each other, I think we can get this through. And when I looked at the other teams in my vertical and even the entire organization, I think we had a better transition than most, because it really was more of an inviting. And, you know, this was my first attempt at leading a transformation as an internal change guy, right? Like I'd sort of been involved in them. This is my first chance at my first stab at actually being the mouthpiece to say, yes, we can do this and trust me, it'll work. And because I had that rapport with my directs, and plus I had that rapport even around the floor, I think we had a lot of good success. And I think our team did very well because they were so prepared for it and they knew it was coming, and they knew that things were going to go wrong, and that's not the worst thing in the world, that it really did become sort of inviting, but also I guess sort of inspiring. I guess they were ready for the journey and they embraced it. And you know, there are a couple of older, old school people who are a little bit recalcitrant, I guess, reluctant to adopt to it and to even try it. But even they eventually came around. That alludes to the tipping point I referred to earlier. When you have a team of 12 people and seven of them are completely bought in and two of them are pretty much on the fence or just waiting for that final push, you know, sociology and group dynamics is you don't want to be the odd man out being difficult for the sake of being difficult. So even then you're inflicting it to the point where they become invited. So I thought that was an interesting scenario to be in.
No, absolutely. So you said something interesting that I keyed in on. So do you guys think that there's a difference between the internal change agent and an external change agent? So being internal, let's say full time, you're sort of driving the change. Were you influenced by an external entity like a consultant, or was this truly, you know, the internal drive of the organization and you just became sort of the muse and the change agent to drive that vision? I know that I've been on both sides of the fence, so I always find this an interesting topic.
I really do think I've been working on this blog post and I'm bouncing it around. I just can't get it finished. The whole idea of the different types of change agents in an organization and what do you need to guarantee success. I do think there is a difference between an internal and an external change agent. The way I look at it is an internal change agent is someone like, say we hire Mike and he's a scrum master and he's all about using Agile and he gets it and he develops a rapport with his people and he's the mouthpiece standing up saying, I've done this, it'll work. Just trust me, we're going to get through this, we're going to make it happen. That's my idea of an internal guy. Or someone who, after going through the initial couple passes, is really gets it. Like, you know, they turn a corner and the light bulb goes off and they're totally bought in. For me, an external change agent would be someone like an Agile coach, where you would go out and you'd say, okay, Mr. McCalla, I've taken my organization as far as I think I can get them, or we're on our journey, but we need someone who's an expert to come in and give us little course corrections, some hints. You know, you may know coaching moments better than most, when to step in a coach, when to lead, when to actually do. For, you know, Mike, you talked about sometimes you end up being a doer. That's when you bring the external guy in. They're the ones who, to me, have the dyed-in-the-wool knowledge. They've been in trenches in different organizations other than mine, and I'm bringing them in to bring their expertise and experience to help not only myself and my team learn, but to guide us along that circuitous path.
No, I mean, that's interesting. I know from my experience, having sat on both sides of the fence, I struggle with this one. I'm not sure because breaking the cultural bias sometimes or the cultural habits is difficult even when you're an internal change agent. And I think sometimes that can weigh and sort of divert you from making certain decisions or best made decisions. And being external, you know, if you're truly in a consulting fashion, you're not really job interviewing. So you're really there to drive change, but you might be too aggressive in that, right? Like you might be take no prisoners and have no compassion. So, you know, and it doesn't matter because you can leave the wreckage in your wake. We've all seen consultants come in and do that. I mean, it's an ego thing at some point, and that we could definitely have that podcast another night, you know, the beauty of being a consultant, the damage it can create. But I'd be curious to sort of get your take on that, Mike, around sort of your opinion on internal versus external.
So I'm going to take the easy way out on this one, guys, and say it doesn't really matter. It's the one that shows results, right? So if you give me
spoken like a true coach.
Absolutely.
And he's being pragmatic. It depends.
I prefer consulting on that one.
You earned your bill rate tonight.
There you go. No, but really, right? Like at the end of the day, whether you're internal or external, you know, I know one of our uprisers, you know, Ryan Lockard is an internal coach, right? And I think he's respected because he gets results in doing what he does, right? In a very agile fashion. That said, I do think if people pay for consultants to come in, right, they're typically, if management is promoting them, people are going to listen to you. So it is probably a little bit easier. I can tell you that whenever I go to a organization through like a big time consulting company, people tend to listen to me much more than I go through like a staffing company. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's the truth. You know, at the end of the day, it's 3 to 6 months in, what have you done for me lately? And we'll go from there.
Yeah. That's the truth of it all. The truth of it all.
That's right.
So, you know, as we're sort of sitting here debating between the two, the invite or inflict, you know, it seems like we come to a point in all the podcasts we've been doing around just sort of that leadership quality and almost, and I think Mike, you were going to touch on this a little bit, the whole business agility, you know, what does the organization have to do to sort of adopt this and really invite others to sort of join them in the process, as opposed to just saying, hey, do this now, cause we just told you to, and, you know, let me know when it's done.
Well, that's interesting, cause it came up at the conference left about, define agile, right? What type of agile are you inflicting on these people? Are you inflicting the crap that goes on in a lot of organizations in which it's just traditional project management with a bunch of agile labels? Or are you actually empowering these people, right? What agile is all about. Because if it's the latter, it should be a pretty easy sell. So that was a really another layer of complexity here, right? Like, oh, okay. Like, so we're talking bad agile versus good agile, and you're saying that people are kind of sniffing out the bad agile. And I heard someone say this the other day. It's like, this is just agile theater. You're saying we're agile, but we're not agile, right? So I thought that was I really enjoyed
it. Kabuki agile. That's pretty good. Kabuki agile. Yeah. I like that.
I like the agile theater one. I've heard that before. Agile, that's a good one. Theater.
So that conversation came about, right? Because immediately people were like, well, the problem isn't that we're inflicting or we're inviting, like, forget that, right? Like, because if we're inflicting the right stuff, they're going to get it, you know, two, three sprints in, like, holy shit, this is really good stuff, right? And I'm empowered to make decisions. And this is what I always wanted as a software developer, right? And so that conversation happened, which was fantastic because it was spot on, right? And I think we know that. So I don't know. I don't want to lead us down a rabbit hole, but that's definitely an input here of, okay, well, what type of agile are you inflicting on me? Because if you're inflicting the right kind, it's probably in my best interest, and it will be, and the label will go off a lot quicker, right, if it is the right way. And I truly am empowered and I can make decisions.
I think in my current engagement, I'll be honest, I don't even say the word agile anymore. I say the A word. Okay. And the reason being, when you use that word, right, and because of Mike's point about bad agile, like being inflicted bad agile on people, inflicting it on an organization, that load comes with a whole bunch of load. That word comes with a bunch of preconceived notions. It comes loaded with people's past experiences, expectations, things they've read on the internet, things they've heard in a podcast. And it becomes a very much a double-edged sword. And that's where, I mean, Mike, to your point, you could be sitting in a room full of 20 people where you've just been brought in to help them, guide them on their journey. And depending upon their past experiences, right off the top of the head, half of them may fall into the inflict, where you're going to have to inflict it. Half of them may fall into the invite. And then the challenge really becomes, how do I get everybody into the invite bucket and out of the the basket of deplorables inflict bucket?
That's it, Jay. Actually, I think half of the attendees at the camp actually said the same thing, that they don't even go down that road of using the word agile anymore, because it's just such a watered down, loaded term that means so many different things to so many different people, right? And so let's just not even go down there. So you're doing something right, Hershka.
Oh, thanks.
So it's interesting. And I, again, you keep leading me down the rabbit hole, so I'm jumping.
Yeah.
Sort of two things. For me, I'm starting at a huge client on Monday, perfect example of what you guys are talking about. You know, Fortune 200, you know, basically got a call and said, we need to be agile. And when
no pressure left. Yeah.
And when you ask, well, what does that mean? I don't know. That's why we're hiring you. So it's, but just make sure you're done in 3 months.
Right.
So again, it's trying to pivot and get them to understand what that means and almost walking in with the bullhorn and being like, this is agile. This is what it feels like. I'm screaming in your ear because it's going to be painful and you're not going to like it and it's going to be uncomfortable.
They're going to love you, dude.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I give myself a week. But on the flip side of that, and maybe this is, you know, sort of a you know, really obvious question. Is this why smaller or startup type development shops or even just smaller organizations seem to take to this much quicker? Because there isn't that huge cultural rift that has to be created to sort of create change or have change, you know, ripple through the organization slowly and get all those people on board rowing at the same pace? Or is it, you know, are smaller organizations just ready to move quicker and just have an appetite to be a little different creatively?
Well, I think, I mean, having been part of small organizations in a coaching role as well as a full-time employee, they have to be that way, right? So that's just the nature of the beast. But it has been my experience as they scale up and they get, you know, they actually become mature startups or, you know, I don't know, regular companies, they actually look back and say, man, we can't do anything anymore. Right. Because, you know, everything is so, you know, process based and they want to try to get back. So a lot of organizations actually start off pretty nimble because, well, that's how they survive. But then they start to put all this governance and process into place as they grow and scale. And what they realize is it's really inhibiting their agility.
So that's I don't mean to cut you off, but it's a super interesting point. So here we have a small organization that's built their sort of foundation around the core values. And when they get to that point where it's not working anymore, why aren't they still continuing to do the inspect and adapt and sort of figure out where they need to change to not fall into that sort of this doesn't work anymore model? It's an interesting sort of philosophy at some point. I'd love to do a study around, you know, when a company sort of gets too big, like what's that pivotal moment where they start to lose sight?
I think the reason I'm going to give an attempt to answer your question of why don't they go back to the inspect and adapt? I think at that point it becomes organizational is inertia, where you've kept this forward velocity, you've maintained this trajectory that you're moving and you're moving and you're moving. And like Mike said, you added, or I think it was maybe you, Andrew, you add governance, you add all these other things on top of it. It becomes this monstrous process. And eventually it eats everything else, right? It becomes part of the culture and it eats everything else. And I don't think it's very hard for a company to get back to the introspective, let me evaluate what I'm actually doing. Like, let's get real here. Let's have some hard moments and figure out how do we fix it. I mean, Mike, you talked about smaller companies and how, you know, they know they have the luxury of when you're below the Dunbar number and that sort of thing. It makes it easier, I would think, to adopt or change these sort of things. When I look at some of the large enterprise companies I work for, which is a whole other podcast discussion entirely, enterprise versus small. One of the biggest pain points about utilizing or changing to an iterative methodology is back to, we talked about project managers earlier. We hinted at that. When you start bringing up, we're going to utilize the A word, everybody starts thinking of, okay, well, where do I fit in that future state? How does the architect fit in? How does the project manager fit in? What does the launch manager do? And I think that concern in the culture sort of bubbles to the surface and it basically makes you stall, right? It's the old iron law of institutions, right? Eventually people come to a point where they're only concerned about their role inside the organization or the institution, regardless of the, so it's not a word, regardless of the organization's success or failure. And I think people start to, you know, they use their own self-interest to drive and they get so concerned about where they fit in this future state, in this puzzle, that they it kneecaps them. I mean, what do you think, Andrew?
I think, you know, you sort of brought us full circle in the sense of, again, it becomes along that invite or inflict. What was sort of the core? What are we forgetting? How did we forget how we got here? And you know, why are we sort of falling into this trap that we said we would never fall into? So I just, to me, it blows my mind that, you know, you could take a small company that's creative and fluid and sort of moves at a rapid pace, and it falls apart when you try and put structure in it. Is structure the death of that? Go ahead, Mike.
No. I mean, so Andrew, I think one thing to highlight here is that I don't think these companies know they're expecting and adapting early on. Right. To me, it's they look at, oh my God, we have to pay our employees in the next pay period. So it's all hands on deck. Let's figure out a way. Right. And so they are looking at they are looking at the past 2 weeks and saying, hey, how did we screw this up? Right. How can we get better? Right. Until eventually when they actually start to scale and they become a successful company. Right, they're like, oh, okay, now we need to make money. We don't have to worry about that. Let's put in some governance, some process. Right, so you made the mention of, you know, people were living by the values. I don't know if that's always true. I think it was just, you know, hey, we need to survive. Right, I think there are some companies out there that, you know, truly embrace the principles and values, like the Spotify's and the Zappos of the world. Right, that have been able to scale the mindset, scale the principles and values. And I hope we see that more going forward. But I think like a lot of traditional companies that started small, right? I feel like they didn't realize they were constantly inspecting and adapting and doing that the right way. One of the best stories I tell, and Hershka, you can probably identify with this because it happened in your vertical in our previous engagement, was a company had to, so basically they were being fined, the organization we're working for was being fined a certain amount of money every month for regulation violations, right? And so what actually happened was, right, in that organization, we were in component teams. I'm not sure if you guys remember that. But what they did was, hey, I got a great idea. Let's set up a cross-functional team, right? And so we can get it done quicker, right? So it was like, basically what they were saying was, hey, what we're doing right now is wrong. We know that, but it gives us process and governance. And in order to get done something fast, we're going to get a cross-functional scrum team together. Right? So it's like that sacrifice. It's amazing to me.
I mean, I think we could go down a huge, just a whole, I really think the idea of agile governance, just that term itself, I think we could have a podcast episode or two about that, because I really, you know, not to get off the topic, but I really do think a reason a lot of enterprise size organizations are reticent to adopt a new type of delivery methodology is because they're worried about the auditors and the compliance guys and the governance around that. And it ends up being a paralytic, that fear. I mean, that's a whole other conversation for another night, but yeah, I do.
We'll definitely table that. I think we could literally spin off the agile within the financial world and within the pharmaceutical world in a very interesting topic as well. I think
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
That's why I wasn't speaking on the smaller, you know, startup sort of views very well, because unfortunately I don't have that joy in my life.
Yeah, just to plug that, I think, you know, in being in the financial industry for whatever, yeah, basically most of my career, I feel like with those audits, once you start peeling those things back, there's other ways to satisfy them, right? Absolutely. So
I'll tell you the real quick sort of the way I satisfy them real quick. Does someone go to jail if we don't do this? Well, no, then we don't need it. That's done. That's end of discussion. Anyway.
I liked it.
I'm going to use that in my next meeting and see how that goes. Will I go to jail if I don't write this plan? Okay, good. Right.
Not just with compliance, but we're totally deviating at this point. Totally falling off the rails.
So I got one more thing for you guys, because this came up in the conference, right? So let's take it out of the consultant domain, right? And let's just say that we're just somebody who's really passionate about Agile and we find someone very resistant, right? Do you think it's better to inflict it upon them, right? Or to literally just let them kind of find their own way, right? So like no agenda on our side, right? But how do we get to that endpoint faster? Is it by inflicting it upon them, or is it by kind of inviting them and just kind of, you know, say, hey, we're doing this over here. If you want to come over, go ahead, right? How do we get to that endpoint fast enough? Because that was really where I think a lot of the folks in the conference were going, hey, we want to actually, our mission is to achieve this. This is our end goal. And by inflicting it, we could actually be making that a longer journey than it really has to be, right? So what's your guys' thoughts on that as far as approaching that?
Jeff?
So for me, I love the resistance. I mean, that's sort of the world we live in. But for me, I like to understand why they're resistant. So literally, sometimes I'll pull someone aside and we'll just go in a room and whiteboard it out. Tell me all the reasons you hate this process. And then tell me all the reasons that you're unhappy with your current process.
And then punch me in the face.
Yeah, right? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I feel like you have to break that barrier down and you have to build that almost that compassion to a point where you're saying, tell me your problems. You know, the Dr. Phil method, this is a safe place to talk about hard things. You know, literally sort of lay it out there. Tell me why it's not working. Is it because you just don't understand? Are you worried about losing your job? Are you worried about, you know, moving too quick? There has to be an underlying reason.
So Lef, you're interested in, you know, you don't want to wait around and figure it out, right? Like you're saying, hey, I want to get to the core of the problem now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have time to be honest with you. It could be more disruptive to wait and see what happens. And I'm a big sort of proponent of sort of watching and getting insight as to how people are behaving and reacting and sort of letting the team consume some of that and empower the team to drive that change to some degree, but it depends on the maturity of the team.
So to bring this full circle, right? And when Hirschko started to go down that rabbit hole, and I think the first 5 minutes of this conversation.
Sorry.
You talked about inspire here, right? And it sounds like kind of that's where you're going with this, Lef.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to say, hey, man, I'm not going to wait around. I'm not going to invite, right? Instead, I'm going to try to get to the core of the problem and inspire you to kind of join me in this journey.
Yeah. How do you want to make this work? How's this going to work in your universe?
Yeah. How you like that, Hirschko? Brought that full circle.
Good, nice segue.
That was beautiful.
I think in any organization, in any team, you're going to find people who are just intractable, right? They're not interested. They're comfortable. They're happy. They're safe. Safe, Hari. Sorry, bad pun. they're settled into how they do the things they do. And there is no appetite for change from them for whatever reason. And I do think, Lef, that pull them aside conversation, I think if you can build a rapport leading up to that, it does help. Say, hey, can you chat with me and explain to me, you know, what are your objections? Where am I not serving this that you're still reluctant to embrace it? And then I don't think, when I start thinking of inflict versus invite, I can't see any use case where inflicting actually will end up positive. To your point, Mike, I think you said it may extend the time that you're going to need to be engaged. You know, you can make some people happy some of the time, most of the time, and not all the time. And I think it really does become, you want to sort of inspire them, but at the same time, you invite the rest of the team. And we've all been in those places. I mean, I could be quite difficult. I'll wake my wife up and have her tell you. I hate to be told what to do, but at the same time, even the most stubborn, cynical person, right, is going to eventually wake up and say, you know what, why is it working for everybody else and it's not working for me? Maybe I should give this a shot. Maybe I'm making this harder than it actually is. So it does, there is an inspiration part of it, but I can't see where inflicting it is going to get me anywhere quickly, better, faster, or be even positive. I mean, nobody likes having stuff done to them.
No, and I think to your point, you'll get those people that aren't willing to change at all are not changing. They're not probably doing a great job in their current situation either. It's just, to me, at some point, you know, it's ingrained in their behavior. And that's, you can't change, the methodology isn't going to change that, or the framework's not going to change that. It's going to expose it. So it's, you know, you get to a point where you can't always foster change within people, even when you ram it down their throat. There's certain people that just, you're going to be resistant.
Yeah, they're not interested. Okay, well, it is what it is.
That's right. Forget Agile or whatever you're throwing at them, Kanban. It's just about, listen, man, it's 2016. You got to have an open mind. You got to be willing to change, right?
Yeah.
There'll be something new 10 years from now. Right, that it being in software development, you have to be willing and ready to change.
Yeah, we don't live in castles anymore for a reason, right? We don't build castles anymore.
Well, you don't. Oh, <that's true>.
I walked into that one.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think that was good the way we sort of ended up in the inspire sort of mindset. I think it's important to, you know, along with the change agent sort of theme is being able to inspire that change, you know, make people want to drive something different, you know, have everyone leading that change. I mean, that's really how you change culture at that point.
I mean, something I just popped into my head is the difference of inflicting Agile versus inviting Agile a difference of perception?
Sure.
Maybe like Mike is doing Mike, right? And Andrew's doing Andrew, and Jay's doing Jay. And maybe due to someone's preconceived notions or due to their past experiences, they feel like it's being inflicted on them versus they're being invited.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Get around. That's where it becomes truly a one-to-one conversation. Because how do you even, you don't know that until you open that can of worms and see how people react to it. There's no way of knowing.
Are you going down that it depends can of worms?
I hate to bring that up, but no. I just think that if you're good and accomplished in doing what you're doing, perception is reality, and maybe someone is perceiving that you're inflicting this on me when in actuality you are inviting them. They've had a preconceived notion or a bad experience, and that's how tempering their judgment.
Well, gentlemen.
One last plug here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good conversation about this stuff going on at the Uprising over on the Coalition, and around these type of topics. And we're all learning from each other and trying to be change agents. So just a plug for the Uprising, encourage people to jump on there and help us spread the word.
Yeah, so I was going to say we've managed to chew through an hour of time, and it always goes by really quick.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate you guys sort of jumping on. Was there anything, Mike or Jay, you wanted? Are you speaking upcoming? You have any posts coming out? Anything you wanted to plug besides the Coalition?
No, I've done my speaking engagements for the year. Amen. my wife is happy about that. But as you guys know, I got a new project in the oven, Agile Insights, which is an organizational change management tool, starting with the assessment module, fully customizable. And we're hoping to get a proof of concept out there pretty soon and get everybody's feedback and just a little pet project of ours to help drive organizational change in the right way.
Yeah, I'm excited to actually...
Yeah,
dive into that with you, Mike. So, you know, maybe you can give the Coalition members a little bit of a early preview on that when you have a more fully baked version ready to go.
Yep, absolutely.
How about you, Jay? You have anything going on?
I have nothing to plug except that the new Car Bomb album comes out on Friday. I heard an advance copy today, and it is easily in my front running for the album of the year, but we'll pick this up on the heavy metal podcast that Ryan and I are putting together. That should be a really good time. We'll pull a stop sign on that one and really scare some people.
People are lining up for that one, man.
Well, dudes, lots of dudes.
Well, guys, again, I appreciate you hopping on tonight. This was, again, a great, great discussion. I thoroughly enjoyed it. We publish these podcasts every Monday, as long as we get the editing done. So if you head out to the Coalition at Agile Uprising, you'll be able to download not only this podcast next Monday, but a slew of other podcasts that we currently have out there. So keep the feedback coming, keep the suggestions coming, and we look forward to hearing everyone's feedback and chatting with you out on the coalition. So
yeah, just want to thank you guys. This conversation was awesome, man.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.